Proudly presented by the U.S. Army, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. We're less than a week away now from the 75th anniversary of D-Day, and we're hearing from men who jumped behind enemy lines under the cover of darkness. Four of the more than 13,000 paratroopers who took part in that gigantic effort to free occupied France from the tyranny of the Nazi regime. Bob Chisholm is one of a little more than 300 Americans who would receive the Combat Infantry Badge in World War II, the Korean War, and the Vietnam War. His very first combat experience came as one of D-Day's youngest paratroopers.
I actually did enlist underage. I enlisted when I was 17. I was giving my parents such a hard time about it, they were glad to get rid of me, so they let me fudge on my age. I was one of the youngest members of the 508.
When you signed up, is that what you wanted to do? Did you have this crazy thing in your mind? You know what? I think it'd be great to jump out of airplanes and with a parachute on and land behind enemy lines.
Had no idea. I took my basic training at Camp Walters, which was in Mineral Wells, Texas. And during the basic training, toward the end, they sent recruiting teams out from Fort Benning, Georgia. And I think that we had two paratroopers, and they were in their jumpsuits, and they looked sharp, and they put on a demonstration of, then they called it jiu-jitsu, and they put on a demonstration, and at that point, I made up my mind, I want to be one of them. And so I volunteered for the airborne, and at the completion of basic training, they sent me to Fort Benning, Georgia, and I completed the jump school in December of 42. The regiment moved to Camp McCall, and we'd gone through extensive training, and we had some of the finest officers and NCOs that the Army ever produced. In particular, one that will always be in my mind is Lieutenant Colonel Louis G. Mendez. He was our battalion commander, and I think that because of the training that we'd received from him, an emphasis on the task in front of us and getting in preparation for it, that I'm here today. And the time that we were ready to go into Normandy, I think without exception that most of the troopers in the regiment were ready to go, because that's what we've been training for. We look forward to it. I don't recall ever having any anxiety at all about it. Physically and mentally, you were ready. You thought that you were the best, and as far as we were concerned, we were the best. We were the elite. This is what we've been training to do. Let's go and do it.
Well, I know it's been 68 years, but I also imagine that every time June 6th rolls around, you reflect back on it. So I'm guessing your memory of that day is still pretty sharp. How early did that day start for you?
Well, it actually started on June the 5th. I think around 10:30 in the evening, we boarded the planes. We'd had one delay, of course, one day delay. And we boarded the planes. We took off from our airfield and circled and joined with the rest of the flights. I think the best I can remember is we were out of the plane at about 1:37. Well, as we passed over the Guernsey Islands, we caught some flak there. And then as we passed over the Normandy coast, we began to get flak, and we ran into the clouds. And the planes, not the ones in my particular V, but the other planes began to disperse. And consequently, when we jumped, our Pathfinders had not been able to set up their equipment. So we then jumped on the green light of the pilot where he thought we should be. And it wasn't, I didn't land on our designated DZ or landing zone. In fact, when I landed, I didn't know where I was at. I didn't recognize the terrain around me at all. And the hedgerows. And I had a little problem getting out of my chute. And I had to take my knife that I had strapped to my leg and cut myself out of my chute. Walked out to the road, and the first I heard was a motorcycle coming down. I knew we didn't have any motorcycles. And so it was a German motorcycle sidecar. And opened fire on them, knocked them out, and kept walking. Came up on a glider, looked in the glider, and everybody in the glider was dead. Walked a little while further into St. Mary Gleese. And I saw John Steele hanging from the tower in St. Mary Gleese. So that was the 3rd Battalion of the 05 had the objective of taking St. Mary Gleese. They were there, and so I stayed with G Company of the 05 for the first 4 days until we got together more of the 508.
And folks who've seen the movie The Longest Day know John Steele. When you say you saw John Steele hanging there, he's the paratrooper whose parachute caught on the back steeple of the church. He was hanging there for 2 hours pretending to be dead. He was eventually captured by the Germans, but then escaped and rejoined his division. As you described that, as you come down, you have problems with your chute. You have to cut yourself out. Now, I'm hearing that you were all by yourself at this point?
I was all by myself, yep.
And you're 18 years old?
I'm 18 years old.
Behind enemy lines on D-Day, June 6, 1944. Did it hit you how difficult the situation you were in, or were you just running on adrenaline? I mean, what was that like to be an 18-year-old in those kind of circumstances?
The only thought that I had at that time was to get together with the other members of my unit and get the mission accomplished that we were given. I don't think that the severity of the situation really struck me until we were on in the trenches dug by the Germans outside of St. Mary Glees and had an 81 mortar position sitting there. And the 81 mortar position fired off a couple of rounds. These were the 505. And they drew fire from an 88 and killed everyone in that mortar position. And that's when it struck me. You can get hurt doing this. And that was the first time. It dawned on me how serious the situation was. I was the number two man in the stick behind my platoon leader. I was his radio operator. So he was standing in the door watching our flight as we passed over the coast, and he could see some of the flak that the planes were getting. Really, the only thought was, let's get out of the plane, get it over with, get on the ground, and get going on our mission.
And I'm just imagining that every hour brought another situation you'd never faced before in your life, and you have to be pretty adaptable in those circumstances. Pick it up where you left off, and because you're still behind enemy lines. You met up with some of your fellow Americans that are fighting the Germans there. What did you encounter next?
The 3rd Battalion of the 05 was holding a pretty strategic position there in St. Mary Glees because this was a key road junction, and the only way the Germans could get reinforcements down toward the beach was to pass through St. Mary Glees. So the Germans attacked St. Mary Glees on several occasions, and we were involved in fighting off the attack, defending against them, which we did. So it was the several days that I was with them, with the 505, we had been subjected to attacks by the German and defending position. Then I began to meet up with more of the troopers from the 508 and left the 05 and rejoined our unit.
All right, so there was still a long way to go for what you would encounter. This is the first day of the invasion that you described for us, and moving forward, you meet up with some of the guys that you knew before, and I'm sure that the stories started to come your way about guys who hadn't been as fortunate as you. Did it start to weigh on you, the losses that you knew had been suffered in that first jump on June 6th?
No, at that particular time, I wasn't aware of any losses. I had not had any conversation with anyone that said, we lost so-and-so or lost so-and-so. The actual knowledge of the losses would come on a day-to-day basis later when we actually got involved in attacking our objectives, and then you would actually see some of those that you had been friends with through the training years become casualties. And that began to impact on you. And then you begin to realize how serious this whole thing was, that this was really a pretty dangerous operation, and people were getting killed, and it could happen to you.
And how constant was it for you? Did you ever find time to get a little break, or were you always on edge? Did you never have a chance to relax a little bit in that situation?
I don't recall ever having relaxed a minute from the time that we jumped into Normandy until the time that I was wounded and evacuated through medical channels. Yeah, and you stayed on the edge all the time, and you the adrenaline was flowing, and this was very helpful to you too, because it kept you more you became more alert and realized that this was a situation that could result in your death, and so you better stay sharp. You better remember everything that you'd been taught during your training. So that was a constant reminder of just how serious the situation was.
Well, you kind of answered my next question, which was, how did you keep from cracking up in a situation like that, from staying focused and being able to do your job. And you talk about that adrenaline and staying alert. Do you think, was there one thing, one concept, one idea that maybe had been shared with you in training, or just one aspect of your personality and the way you were equipped that you think helped you get through it?
Well, I think that the training that we had taken and been exposed to was the major factor in your mental attitude in combat. We had received the best training, I think, that any individual could probably possibly get. The mere fact that we were paratroopers and that we were expected to be able to do more than your average soldier. This had been really emphasized during all our training, that you're airborne, you're paratroopers, you're the elite, you're the best, and that's the way we expect you to be. And that's the way we were. I think initially and then on during the entire campaign with the airborne. Now, don't misunderstand me. After that initial contact, especially seeing that the mortar crew being killed, it stayed in your mind just how serious the situation was, and then you begin to feel that fear. And that's not something that I had it to begin with. There just wasn't anything that bothered me to that point. But with each day of combat, you become a little more fearful. And the only thing that kept me going, and I'm sure that you'll hear this again, that kept the others going, I would rather have anything happen to me than to let my buddies down. That was a driving force. That pretty much predominated throughout a lot of individuals.
Just knowing that someone else was depending on you, so it's one thing to let yourself down, but if you let them down, then you're doing everybody a disservice?
That's exactly right. I would have preferred to have been killed than to have let my buddies down.
Wow. And when that day gets here every year, and when you think back, you experienced it from one person's point of view, but with the lens of history, you've seen the big picture, and you know how significant that day was. What's the significance to you? What are you most proud of in terms of being a part of June 6, 1944?
The thing I'm most proud of is I have survived. Mm-hmm. Not really. To have been a part of that operation, to have been a part of history, I think it has really left an impact on myself and probably most veterans that participated in D-Day.
So you mentioned, I know we're skipping past probably a lot of things to get there. Where were you wounded? What was the circumstances around that? What happened?
I was on a patrol. We were preparing to attack out of the position we were in, and I was on a combat patrol. We were to make contact with the enemy to find out what where their positions were. And I was the point man on the patrol with my good friend Bill Hughes. It was about 10 o'clock in the morning. It was daylight. We walked into a German position that had a armored car and a machine gun, and I took a machine gun wound in my right shoulder and my forehead. I remember that distinctly because it was my 19th birthday, June the 23rd.
June the 23rd of 1944. Happy birthday. And you say your forehead. Now, I've talked to a lot of guys with a lot of close calls, but to me, if you were wounded in the forehead, that's a pretty stinking close call.
Actually, back of my head here.
All right.
Just the bullets just broke a little bit of my skull and the skin, and then all my right shoulder. I was taken out.
Did you lose consciousness, or were you?
No, I didn't. My friend Bill Hughes kept saying, Bob, are you all right? And every time he said, Bob, are you all right? They'd open up that machine gun again. And I was just in enough of defilé that it just clipping the top of my head still. I was thinking, I wish he'd shut up.
Shut up or we're going to get killed, huh?
He says, I'm going to open fire on him, and let's get the hell out of here. And I had a BAR. I don't know how I ended up with a BAR, for God's sakes. But I had a BAR, and when he opened fire, I jumped up and opened fire, and we both took off, and we ran into our patrol on the way back. So I was able to move pretty good still.
You had to be in a pretty good amount of pain, though, I would think.
I guess I was. I don't recall it so much.
But he would spend 2 months in a British hospital as a result of those injuries. Every single one of the paratroopers whose voice you're hearing from today was a recipient of the Purple Heart at least once during World War II. That includes the one we'll hear from when we come back. And wait till you hear how he's going to mark D-Day's 75th anniversary. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.